everybody. My name is Donna, and I'm a member of Al-Anon.
Oh,
that feels good. Flip Wilson said a while back that don't let your mouth write a check that your body can't cash. I didn't know there would be a 500,000 people here today. But I have a very neat financial advisor that I turned my check over to this morning. It's going to be all right. I want to thank the committee for inviting Neil and I to Palm Springs. And Al-Anon has taught me that I can be a better receiver. It's been hard for me to receive, easy to give. And I have been charmed to receive the precious hospitality and love and warmth that you've had for us here in Palm Springs. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Chuck. Neil has been a great guy in my life. I have learned so much from him. And today I'm learning every day. You know, he's happy. He is a happy person. And I want the happiness that he has, and I found out that he has a key. And the key is gratitude. He's grateful for the sunrise, and he's grateful for the sunset, and he's grateful when he breaks a shoelace. He has a grateful heart, and therefore he has a happy heart. Neil says he's going to write a book called Living with the Wife of an Alcoholic. Going to be in 4 volumes, and if you want the volume I'm in, it'll be number 4. People ask us why we get along so well, and I always feel uncomfortable when I say this, but I feel like it's the truth. Neil lets me have my way in the things that matter, and I let him have his way in the things that don't matter. I am married to a person who has a fatal illness. It's cunning, powerful, baffling, destructive, progressive, fatal. Neil will have this illness until the day he dies. The only thing he has going for him is a spiritual fitness that he finds in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we find this in every meeting we go to. We find spiritual food. That's the reason that we put Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon as top priority in our life. I think if someone came to us today and said there will never be another AA or Al-Anon meeting on the face of the earth unless we would tonight give our lives, we would be willing to do that. Because without the program, we have no life. Alcoholism is a fatal illness, and you better believe I believe that. People die around us all the time of alcoholism and the effects of alcoholism. It was described to me this way several years ago by Dr. Stanley Gitlow in New York. I love it. He said, the tiniest one-celled animal, an amoeba, has basic instincts and basic drives for warmth, for food, for reproduction. Man is a multi-celled animal, and yet the compulsion of alcoholism, the obsession to drink, is so powerful that it will deprive the person of every basic drive he has. This is alcoholism. It will not respond to logic. It will not respond to reason. It will not respond to, if you loved me, you'd quit drinking. A powerful, powerful compulsion that I, as a non-alcoholic, do not understand. And there's no way I can understand it. Neil did not set a goal as a child to become an alcoholic when he grew up. This was not one of the things that he really wanted to do with all of his heart, was to become an alcoholic and lose his family and his friends and everything. But somewhere along the way, he lost the power of choice. And he did not do those things because he chose to. He did them because he could not do any differently. If I were an alcoholic, and thank God I'm not, I would imagine I would have died an alcoholic suicide. Because in my life, I do things I don't like myself for. And I beat myself for. And they're not big things, really. I'm not losing my job and losing my friends and losing my life and my home and everything materially we have because of alcoholism. But if I were, and I could not stop doing them, I'm sure that the self-hatred and the self-condemnation would condemn me to drink again and again. And I could not stand it. Thank God I'm not an alcoholic. And that I do not have to walk that walk. Alcoholism is a fatal illness. It's one of the most impressive illnesses I know. And it takes a simply fantastic program called a 12-step program of recovery that will overcome this absolutely fantastic compulsion to drink. I want to tell you a little bit about coming to Al-Anon, which I did many, many years ago. I loved going to AA meetings with Neil. The people were really great. I felt comfortable there. But I didn't hear anything from me. It was the same 12 steps. And I remember that I filtered everything through my mind that I thought Neil ought to hear. I hope he heard that, and I'm going to make a note of this, and we'll talk about it when we get home tonight. There was so much there that he needed to hear. And about a little while later, there were some sick spouses of alcoholics in our group who needed to be saved. And since I was Savior of the world, I would form an Al-Anon group for them so they could get well. So we started our group, and you can see how crazy we all were, because they let me be chairman for the first 5 years. During the week, I would call them and find out what their problem was. Then I would center the Friday night program around their problem. Our group didn't grow very much that first 5 years. But then I started hearing something. And when I started to hear, this is what I heard. And I'd been in Al-Anon probably 5 or 6 years at this time. Had not heard a thing. And then I started to hear, I am living with a person who has a fatal illness called alcoholism. Fatal. The second thing I heard is that I cannot control this illness. I cannot diagnose it or treat it. I cannot do anything about it. I am powerless over it. The third thing that I learned is that there are many, many things that I must do in my life and my attitude to help me to be the kind of person that my God wants me to be the kind of person that I would want to come home to. And that's what Al-Anon's all about. I want to tell you a little bit about the 12 steps that we use in Al-Anon that are same as AA uses. Thank you for letting us use them. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I know that I cannot keep Neil from taking a drink if he should choose to, or a pill. I also know that I am not responsible for his spiritual fitness. I read a lot of just simply great books that I thought would help him, I think would help his spiritual life if he would just read them. And there have been times when I've looked in his One Day at a Time book to see if he's turning the pages over. It's so great to not be responsible for his spiritual life. I'm also not responsible for what he wears, where he goes, what he says, how he acts, what kind of a talk he gives. It's not my business. And just a few weeks ago, somewhere in the Al-Anon book, it says we take on the roles of parents of delinquent children. We had finished eating, and Neil had not drank all of his milk, and I said, aren't you going to drink all your milk? He's a mature adult. He's retired. He's had a successful life, and yet I have to mention to him that he's not drunk all of his milk. But I'm learning. Not to do. I don't know if anyone hears like this, but I've been a manager, a manipulator, an arranger all my life. It's very difficult to let God run the universe. Second step, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I had believed all my life that there was a creator. I was born in Kansas, and when I look at the wheat fields just before harvest, I could believe that there was a creator. But I could not believe that there was anyone for me. I'll do it myself, and I'll show the world that I can do it myself, and I'll do it better than you can do it. So when I came to the program and I saw that those who had the peace that passes all understanding were the ones who had a power for themselves. And I wanted it. I want the peace that passes all understanding, and there's only one way that I know to get it. And so my prayer at this time was, help me to believe in you for me. And somewhere along the way, I don't know when it was, there was someone to whom I could turn over my life and my will. This is something that I'm 100% at, making a decision. I'm not 100% in fulfilling it, and I don't have to be anymore. I wanted to be 100% all my life. I wanted to be at the top of the class. I wanted to do everything the very best, and I nearly killed myself trying to be the number one. And I don't have to be. Today, all I have to be is me. And that feels so good. I want you to like me, see. But if you don't, it's not essential to my self-worth and to my well-being for you to like me. And that's a real relief. So I make the decision to turn my life and will. And sometimes I have to break it down into little, smaller compartments. Today I turn over what I'm going to cook for supper, because I don't know what I'm going to cook for supper. Today I turn over my job because I don't know what's going to happen today and I need help with it. Today I'm irritable with Neil and need some help with that. Help me not to be angry, cranky, and irritable today. So sometimes just saying my life and will is too broad for me. I have to bring it down right where I am. It's easy to say I turn over my life and will. The next step is we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I knew that in Al-Anon that they wanted us to use the same 12 steps as AA. And so they put the fourth step in for filler. They really didn't mean for Al-Anons to take an inventory. But I found that once we start on a spiritual path and a spiritual journey, somewhere along the line, it's necessary for me. And if you're new in Al-Anon, don't be discouraged, because I've been coming to the program 9 years before I wrote my first inventory. I wrote it because that's what it tells me to do. And I would write it in moments of despair. And I would be amazed when I would look back over a page that I had written, because I would never allow myself some of the conscious thoughts that I put on paper. I found that I was a spoiled child and had always had things my way. And my brother sitting here has contributed to my delinquency, because he always let me have my way. Always. I found out something about depression, and I want to pass this on to you if I may. I always had ups and downs in my life, and I didn't like them. And so I started doing some work on depression. I found out this, that I would become depressed when something wasn't going my way, or when someone wasn't doing something I wanted them to do or not to do, acting the way I wanted him to. I found out that I became depressed when I was faced with something painful that I didn't want to face, something I didn't want to do. I found that I became depressed when I started living not just today, when I would forget to live one day at a time. and the future would seep in, and sometimes it looked real black. I found that I became depressed when I'd done something I hadn't liked myself for. Guilt. I found that I became depressed when I felt trapped. Repressed hostility is depression. I found that I became depressed, and this is the biggest one of all, when I started believing that all answers depended on me. And this little innocuous thought slides into my thinking occasionally. And it has no right to be there. But it slides in there, and I take it, and I think about it, and I start unconsciously believing that all answers depend on me again. And I don't want to be there. So I found out a few things about me. And this fifth step says, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And so I have a sponsor in Al-Anon who's helping me to grow up emotionally and spiritually. Who's helping me to look at me. Sixth step, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And I didn't know until a while back that it says for God to remove them. I thought that if I could do it myself. And when they talk in the big book about self-will run right, I know. I know what they're talking about. So I thought I could change me, and if I didn't like the way I was, all I had to do was make up my mind about it. And if I failed, just redouble my efforts and keep on trying and keep on plugging. And you know what? This is our program, is the easier, softer way. All I have to do is to become willing, and God does it for me. Isn't that easy? It is so easy. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I want to stop here a minute and go over a few shortcomings with you. Look, because I kind of take my shortcomings a week at a time. I work on one at a time for a week. That's about all I can stand to work on. One of them is self-pity. And this is so, you know, I can recognize self-pity in you just like that. And I don't like to be around people who are feeling sorry for themselves. And why is it so difficult to see in me? But I have it, and I'm trying to be free of it. I'm freer than I used to. I used to think, I won't put on any lipstick this afternoon at work, and they'll know how tired and overworked I am. If they just knew what a tough time I'm having. And any time I have this kind of thought, oh, you better believe it's self-pity. Anytime I say something to you that makes you think what a tough time I'm having, you better believe that's self-pity for me. And I don't want it. I want to be free of it. I found that alcoholics are very skilled at projecting guilt. But I find that Al-Anons are even worse. And I've done this. I have planned to do something that I have asked someone else to do at a time when I knew they would catch me doing it. And I had a little Al-Anon that was so sick that she needed to go to meetings. And I would call her and she'd have some flimsy excuse for not going. And one night she stopped me and she said, Donna, I wish you would quit making me feel guilty when I don't go to meetings with you. Well, I can't stand constructive criticism. So after I cried, I found out that she was right. And that I don't motivate someone or help somebody by projecting guilt at them. The only way that I can help them is to love them just the way they are. Whether they go to meetings or not. Whether they work the 12 steps or not. Whether they write their inventory or not. I cannot make them feel guilty about those things. All I can do is to love them. And I'm glad I know that. I still slip once in a while. But I'm aware of it. Another character defect I work on is blaming others when something goes wrong. Well, I didn't know I had this until a few years ago. Neil and I had gone someplace, and he asked me to press his jacket, and I had a travel iron with me, and I did. And I thought, I have the iron hot, I'll press the collar on my dress, and I did. And when I did, the whole collar of my dress burned out. And I thought, my first thought was, if he hadn't asked me to press his jacket... So I'm learning, I cannot blame others or circumstances when something goes wrong. I am responsible. I have another game I play that I love. And I want to play it until it becomes a habit with me. And it's taking everything with cheerful good humor. And I don't care how irritating or upsetting or how tragic or how sad. No matter what it is, to take it with cheerful good humor. And this is a very tough game to play. It's very difficult because sometimes I want to become angry and I want to be depressed when something goes wrong. And to take it with cheerful good humor, oh, it's hard. But when I do, all is well. All is well. Step 8 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. This is part of my inventory. I wrote a list of people I didn't like and why I didn't like them. And I found out that it was usually my fault. It was my attitude that had caused them to react to me. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I've done that. And it's so great. So you see, the first 3 steps get me right with God. The next 4 steps get me right with me. And steps 8 and 9 get me right with you. And now I can start living. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And it's becoming so easy to say, I'm sorry. The magic words, I don't care anymore whose fault it is. But the magic words, I'm sorry and I love you, can make something just like magic. When something's wrong between Neil and I, and occasionally it is, and I feel something inside my stomach that doesn't feel right, I can say, I'm sorry. Oh, boy, what a relief. And everything's okay. You see, I don't want to be miserable anymore. I've had the days in my life when I wanted to pull the cover up over my head, and it would have been so much easier to have died than to live. It takes courage to live, to face the world and to cope with it. And it would have been so easy to have died. But I don't want to be miserable anymore. And I know that today I have a choice. What I am and what I say and how I act is not dependent on any person or any circumstance. I am free of that most of the time. It is real freedom to not let people or circumstances determine my behavior. Oh, wow. You see, that's real great when things are going good. It's easy to work the 12-step program when everything's going good. But when things are going tough, it's not so easy. Because I have to then face the fact that nobody can make me unhappy unless I choose to be. Nobody can make me feel sorry for myself unless I choose to feel sorry for myself. Nobody can make me angry unless I choose to be angry or resentful. Boy, that's big stuff for me. Because I want to become resentful sometimes and angry. But there's only one thing I have control over, and that's my reactions. And I have a choice. And you cannot make me unhappy today if I choose to be happy. And today I chose to be happy. I'm glad. I don't have to be miserable anymore. Oh, wow. I like that. I like that freedom. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. The first word in the 11th step is sought, to seek. I had thought that I could just flit in and out of Al-Anon meetings and a spiritual awakening would descend on my shoulder and I'd walk off into the sunset And it's not that easy for me. I have to consciously seek a conscious contact with God as I understood him. I know today that's the most important thing in my life. That I can lose everything in this life. I can lose Neil, as precious as he is to me. I can lose my health. I can lose my ability to participate in the program. We can lose everything that we have materially. And unless I have a conscious contact with God, I stand alone and afraid again. And I don't want to be there. Because I have learned and am learning that I don't ever have to be afraid again. And I like it. I like not being afraid. And as long as I maintain and work at and strive for a conscious contact with God, I don't have to be afraid. It's becoming easier because in the last 18 years that I've been in Al-Anon, my concept of God has changed. So it's become easier. When I was small, I used to hear that the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven is within. And I'd say, yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't believe it. I may have intellectually believed it, but I really didn't believe it. And today I know that the kingdom of God does dwell within me. That there is a power that's intangible and invisible within me that I cannot touch, taste, smell, that holds everything that I need for this moment. Patience, understanding, compassion, forgiveness, love, whatever it is. Power, wisdom, holds it right now for me if I'm willing to touch it and to use the key. But if I believe this for me, and I do, I have to believe this for you too. It's amazing what this thought has done towards my attitude towards you when I remember it, and I don't always remember it. But it is so, and I can't tell you, to look out on this crowd and know that within each one of you is a kingdom, a precious kingdom. And I like what Chuck says, we are God's kids. Boy. And for many years I didn't believe it, and I put myself down. I felt guilty. But you see, I don't have to anymore. Because I am a precious child of a loving Father. And it has nothing to do with ego. I don't feel it in an ego way. I feel it in a loving way that He wants the very, very best for me. Far beyond what I can ever want for myself. And like I said at first, I have trouble receiving. It's been hard for me to say thank you when they tell me I look nice. Without apologizing for it. It's hard for me to say thank you when someone says I have on some nice clothes and not tell them I bought them at a sale, you know? Have you ever done that? I don't have to put myself down anymore because I'm a child of the Father. He has done fantastic things for me, and I'm going to tell you about one of them in a minute. Because it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs. Life is a spiritual journey, and I finally climbed on the wagon. It's the most exciting thing to see things happen, new truths and new ideas and new thoughts come into my life that are so great. And it says I only have to have three things in order to grow spiritually. I have to have an open mind, I have to be willing, and I have to have some honesty. Basic honesty to me is not blaming someone else or some other circumstances if my life is not what I want it to be today. If I'm not where I want to be in any area of my life, I can no longer blame you. But I need to go back and again do the 12 steps for me because the answer is there. If I'm not where I want to be, if I'm not happy today where I am, I better look again at the 12 steps because I have missed something. Because those 12 steps work. So I'm having a spiritual awakening. And it's real exciting. I can wake up in the morning and think, oh, wow, another day. And I used to couldn't face a day. Oh, can I make it through a day? And I don't have to feel that way anymore. I want to tell you about a miracle in my life because it's something that is absolutely impossible. Several years ago, Neil and I had gone on a long trip and we'd driven 800 miles that day and we were almost home and we were tired and I said, boy, I wish we could fly. And he said, why don't we? I'd always wanted to learn to fly and I didn't think it would be possible. When I was born with a congenital deformity. There was no way I could ever walk or learn to walk because my feet are where your knees are. And I weighed 3.5 pounds and my little legs were probably about this long. I have no hip joints. So there was no way I could even learn to walk. But as I grew up, I did learn to walk and I went to school and I rode a bicycle. I was only just half as tall as everybody else. In 1952, I had a miracle happen to me. Through a series of miracles, I walked into a man's shop in Kansas City, Missouri one day. And I walked in, I was 4 feet tall. And when I walked out, I was 5'8". And I've never been out in public since that time without my legs on. Talk about a miracle. I was able to drink out of water fountains. I was able to see the food in cafeterias. So many things, my whole world changed overnight. So when Neil said, do you want to fly? And I said, yes. We went to the bank the next morning and we borrowed money we didn't have to buy a plane we couldn't fly. The dumb banker didn't even ask us if we could fly the plane before he gave us the money to buy it. I started taking flying lessons, and 6 months later, I got a private license. 2 years later, I got an instrument rating. I had about 1,200 hours, and we flew to California. Oh, wow. But let me tell you. Let me tell you what I learned. I'd be taking a lesson, and my instructor would say, Donna, just remember one thing. And Bud, if you're in the audience, he's a pilot, he'll know. My instructor said, remember, if you ever get in trouble, power will always get you out of trouble. And I thought, wow, that's just like Al-Anon. I also learned something else, that if I learn the lesson from the experience, then I don't have to re-experience the lesson. Oh, boy. That not only changed my thinking about flying, it changed my thinking about life. It changed my attitude from, my God, why is this happening to me? To what do I need to learn from it? It helped me. Another thing I learned, my instructor told me that if I will follow the numbers, I won't get in trouble. Just like Al-Anon, if I follow the 12 steps, if I follow the script just like it's written, then I won't have power failure. I also learned something else, that I was programmed by what other people thought of me. I would be coming in for a landing, and I knew that all the guys at the airport had, well, they had bets on me. Will she or won't she make it down this time? And I was thinking about what they were thinking about my landing instead of thinking about my landing. And I can't live that way and be successful and be happy. And I find now that when I'm suffering pain, that it's usually because I'm concerned about what someone else is thinking about me. Oh, and I'm trying to be free of that. It's a great freedom. Like I said, I want you to like me, but if you don't, it's okay. Because I like me today. Flying has been one of the most precious experiences of my life. I learned something else. That if I am living within God's will for me, He provides everything I need to fulfill it. The mental acuity, the physical coordination, the persistence, the wisdom, the knowledge, whatever. But He also provides money. Neil and I were on salaries at that time, and we didn't have money to fly. It takes money to fly. Lots of money to fly. And yet it was provided for us in ways we... It's amazing. It's a miracle. He wanted us to have this fantastic experience. And you better believe he's provided us with everything we need to fulfill his will. Oh, isn't that something? I want to thank you so much for letting us fly to Palm Springs. Whenever we fly, we feel loved and cared for, and a feeling that all is well. We have flown in darkness and in storms around them, but I've never been afraid, because I know I don't have to be. I have a choice today. I don't ever have to be afraid again. You have given that to me. I am so, so grateful that you let me find out that I'm the Father's child. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. And may the rains fall gently on your fields. Until we meet again, may God hold you in the hollow of his hand. God bless you, and I love you.